In many ways, the history of farming in Illinois is about its future, how we went from hand tools and horses to self-driving tractors and $10,000 an acre farmland. Retired Extension Director and ISU Professor Don Meyer will dive into 200 years of ag history in the Great Corn Belt later this month during a Bicentennial Speaker Series talk in Springfield. Meyer carves up Illinois farm history into four distinct areas, separated by seismic shifts in technology and world events. We're in the modern era now, he says, and GLT's Ryan Denham asked Meyer what the next era, the fifth era, might look like.
I think so, and I think, of course, technology is going to drive that. I mean, I can't envision where we're headed to. If you would have told me 20 years ago what we'd be doing with technology today, I think the fact that we have driverless cars, we already have driverless tractors. Even today, most of the time, the tractors do have farmers in them or farm help in them, but the tractors are self-guiding using satellite technologies. We're doing prescription weed control. If there's no weed, we don't need to spray. If the machine can find a weed, it can spray it. We keep track of records of where we have problems with disease, and we only need to treat those spots. We're putting our fertilizer on. We're replacing the fertilizer that the crops are using. We're putting it on where the yields are the greatest. That's where the greatest amount of fertilizer gets put back for next year's crop. So I think we're just really at the infancy stage of that. Most farmers today are not happy with a 200-bushel corn crop. They're looking to, in the very near future, that 300 bushels will be the new norm. As we did our history project, we found records of there was a 50-bushel challenge club challenging farmers to try to get 50 bushels per acre. In the 1950s, that was a 100-bushel club. And certainly now, if we had a club, it would be the 300-bushel club.
What do you think that we can learn about ourselves by looking back in this way?
I think it's a continual balancing. You know, the overall theme of 200 years, as I would say, looking back in time, is replacing labor with technology, whether that be simply hand tools with machines, whether that's being replacing labor with electricity. We've always been replacing labor. However, that's been sort of a jobs program because that labor, you know, today's tractors, the average farmer can't just tear into a tractor and overhaul it like we used to even when I was growing up. Today, everything is technology-based, and those are jobs, and those are specialized jobs. And I think the demand for the support for the farmer, we talk about the average farmer in the country. A lot of times you read the statistic that a farmer feeds himself or herself and 150 or 60 people. Really, when you look at the support network that the average farmer has to have to operate a farm, it involves a lot of people. We say typically about 20% of the jobs are somehow related to agriculture across the country. Mm-hmm. So I think that'll be the continual change. Right now, we're kind of also in the era of what I call capitalization, where it takes a lot of money to get into farming. I just couldn't quit my day job and say, I'm going to go out and rent some land. First of all, the land is very competitive to even find. Most of our farmers don't own their land. They rent their land because of the cost of the land. But additionally, on top of that, the average farmer probably has between $1 and $2 million worth of equipment. So when I'm teaching students here at ISU in agriculture, you know, you think of college debt as being a burden when you graduate from college, but think about college debt plus trying to buy the equipment that you need to get into farming. That's probably the biggest challenge we have ahead of us is who can afford to get into farming with the way it's structured today. And I think a lot of folks are looking at that saying, what can be done? We don't necessarily want to go back to the old days of farming everything by hand, but that is a barrier right now to getting young people involved in farming.
My understanding is that Illinois ranks third nationally in the export of ag commodities, with about $8 billion worth of goods shipped off to other countries. In light of the recent trade disputes involving American farmers, I want to ask, when did international markets really open up to Illinois farmers for the first time? Or was it there kind of from the beginning?
I think it actually was there kind of from the beginning. Once we got the trains to arrive, we could basically take care of getting our excess commodities onto a train. And of course, we went into the trucking era. And of course, today with Illinois being, and I always try to challenge my students, you know, Illinois is a large export state because we're on a coast. And those that are busy writing down the answers don't really listen to me because we aren't on a coast. But it's because we have the Mississippi River and the Illinois River and just a tremendous amount of grain that goes down the river in barges. And we really have been a world supplier for a long time. You know, as we looked at the history, as farmers adopted seed corn from 1900 to 1930, the Funk family here in town was a big part of the seed industry. The Funks were involved in selling seed to Europe back in the early 1900s. And so we have been connected to the world for probably 100 years or more. And so that's not new. And certainly the more recent developments have impacted especially soybeans, which is one of our main lines here in Illinois.
There has been a lot of discussion right now about the Trump administration's trade policies and retaliatory actions by other countries. In a history of Illinois agriculture, though, where does this moment kind of fit in? Have there been others like it where there's been this level of uncertainty on prices, on trade involving farmers?
Yes, there have. I grew up in the 60s as a young person growing up. We had grain stored in almost every small town. In fact, the government built bins. They actually owned what we called a bin site, and there might have been 100 small bins. And the government was essentially taking the grain from the farmers because there was no market. There just wasn't an incentive to get that grain. We actually just ended up wasting some of that grain. A lot of humanitarian programs like Food for Peace, I think it's Public Law 480, came into play in that period of time in the Kennedy administration and the Johnson administration, and we were actually giving away the grain because it really had no value here and was going to spoil. Of course, the challenge is when you give away grain is it sometimes puts other farmers in other parts of the world out of business, and their network collapses as well. So you have to, everything, just like everything else in war and peace, you have to be delicately handling this. And right now, we're in a pivotal time with exploring what does this really mean. Most farmers would rather trade than rely on government. I know that one of the solutions right now is a government payout of some kind, but generally those aren't the long-term fix. The free trade has been really good for the farm economy overall.
What is McLean County's role in Illinois agriculture and its history? Where do we kind of fit into this world?
Well, we're, early on, the soils are so good here. We are not necessarily the best soils in the state. I'm always cautious with saying that, but we probably have the largest volume of good soils of any county. It's a very large geographic, obviously the largest county in the state, still very agricultural, very productive land. That has always put us in the limelight because of just simply our sheer production numbers. But you couple that with the agribusinesses and the organizations that have centered here. We have the Illinois Farm Bureau housed right here. We have the Corn Growers, the Soybean Association, many of those organizations housed right here in Bloomington Normal. One time we had Funk Seeds, a world supplier of seed right here in Bloomington Normal. We have the insurance industry based here related to agriculture in a big way. I think it's a combination of not only the production of McLean County, but the related industries of McLean County that have really made their mark here in the county.
Well, you described the 1950s as sort of the end of the era of diversified farms.
That's right.
And if you think of farming in McLean County right now, generally you think of corn, beans, maybe some swine. Has it always been corn and beans in McLean County, or was it much more diverse prior to the 50s as it was in other places?
Well, prior to the 50s, we were mostly corn. Corn has always been a mainstay from the get-go. Corn has been our main crop because we can do that more efficiently than almost anywhere else in the world. Wheat was a larger player, and oats were a larger player, as was hay. Now, when you think about the fact the 1920s tractors came into play, relying on fuel, whether that be diesel or gasoline for the tractors, prior to that time, it was oats and hay for the horses. And so it was fascinating when you look at how things may or may not have happened by design. I don't think it was by design. As the tractors arrived, we no longer needed the acreages for oats or for hay because the horse numbers declined. But at the same time, soybeans began being grown as a crop. We did not grow soybeans for their beans, at least before 1920. And it was they initially were brought in as a crop for a hay crop to feed the animals. We discovered the actual bean part of the soybean actually had more value and more potential use. And so it's fascinating when you see the substitution of oat and hay acres today at soybeans. So corn's been there all along. We've seen oats and hay diminish. We've seen soybeans pick up in a big way. And in fact, out of the last 5 years, soybeans probably have done better economically for our farms than the corn has done, which has been kind of a shock to the corn farmers. Soybeans was always that second crop we would grow just to give our soil a break from corn and to confuse the insects and the diseases a little bit. Right now we're saying, as long as we get the export markets back, soybeans really are here to stay, and there could be some tremendous growth potential with soybeans.
Well, a couple of weeks ago I went out and visited the Funk family farm. They actually,
outstanding, yeah.
Two of their children and one of their fiancés have started a new small local food operation, 9 acres. It's called Funk's Grove Heritage Fruits and Grains. And it's really interesting because it is based on what you're describing here, they're sort of steering back into the past a little bit.
Right.
It's 9 acres. It's very diverse, right? They've got an orchard. They've got grapevines. They're doing some corn. They're doing a lot of wheat. They're not the only ones. I mean, Epiphany Farms, Prairie Earth Farms, these sort of very diverse organic operations.
And we are seeing that. You know, we've been so heavily in what we call a commodity market, where we simply grow corn, beans, take it to the local elevator, and it becomes the property of the whole industrial processing of that crop. We are seeing an uprising of small niche markets, if you will, be they organic, be they serving a certain purpose. And I think probably part of the future will encourage more of that because some consumers would rather buy direct from a local farmer. The challenge we have, of course, is we can't grow things year-round without the advantage of having greenhouses. And so we have to relearn as a consumer that not every crop is in season every year. We've gotten to the point where I always pick on strawberries. If I want to go to find strawberries around the year, I can go to the store, and somewhere in the world they're shipping us strawberries. If we rely only on our local market, we have to learn, okay, this is the month we have strawberries. We need to better can those strawberries because they're not going to be on the shelf for the rest of the year. And I think it's kind of fascinating. I grew up doing a lot of canning with my parents, and we kind of gotten away from preservation of foods, but that may come back as a result, even changing the habits of the consumer. I know some of the folks that do subscription-based farming, where you sign up and they'll bring you, this week this crop is in season, or this week we have this vegetable that's being grown. And it's actually kind of reteaching a lot of the old ways that maybe grandma or grandpa used to do that we've kind of lost in the era of large supermarkets.
What is the face of farming these days? Who makes up the bulk of Illinois' farmers today, and how does that compare to recent eras?
I would say because of the capitalization era, we're seeing that the farmers today, the large full-time farmers, are generally farmers that have been in the business for several generations. It's been passed along, and they're able to come into the operation and use some of dad or grandpa's machinery. In some cases, we have three or maybe four generations working that farm, and that's been a kind of a trademark of Illinois farms over the years. And I think as long as the capitalization is there, we're going to continue to see that continue. Where it is family farm based. It's not corporate farming. The family may have a family corporation, but it's to protect the assets, because we know in the 1980s that was the challenge of economics, that we lost a lot of farms because of challenging economic times in the 80s.
What role have immigrants played in Illinois farming across eras?
Yes, immigration has always been a part of Illinois agriculture, central Illinois agriculture. Most of this area of the state was probably, at least in this county, I should say, would be German immigration. A lot of Irish came in because they were the cheap labor force of the time. I'm half German, half Irish, so I can pick on both of those lines of genetics, if you will. But the Germans largely were the settlers and were able to buy some land. The Irish came in and built the railroads. They helped hand dig in a lot of those drainage ditches. Many of them were paid in land because the large landowners had land more so than cash. They could just deed over some acreages. I know my great-grandfather arrived as an Irish immigrant and was a farm laborer. And by the time he retired, he owned a section of land due to the fact that he had worked hard and saved up his own money to buy that land. Those are the two dominant. We have pockets of English in the county. We also were immigrants from other parts of the U.S. We had the Yankees, we call them, that arrived from the East Coast and were unhappy that things were changing on the coast. This was considered the promised land to move west and do well. And so we have what Greg Coos at the museum calls the Yankees from the East Coast. We have upland Southerners who came up from Kentucky and Tennessee. A lot of those folks came here because there were jobs on the farm. They had to help with harvest, and once they got here, they stayed and worked their way into a farm. So not all of our immigration was across the ocean per se, but it was as much in within the U.S. Watching the immigration patterns as well.
So Don, you'll be speaking in Springfield at the as part of the Bicentennial Speaker Series. You'll be speaking Sunday, August 19th at the Illinois State Museum in Springfield. What do you hope that people take away from your remarks?
Well, I think generally I've done a lot of local programs, and this will be a little larger territory to cover. They're going to learn a lot about Central Illinois. I'm not sure I can speak for Northern or Southern Illinois as well as I can Central Illinois. But I think the dialogue, and my hope would be that as I've seen audiences, I see the intergenerational connect, where if it's a grandparent talking to a grandchild or a grandchild saying, now I know what my grandfather or grandmother was talking about, I think it's one of those puzzle pieces as you're trying to sort out, either as an older person where what your roots are based upon, or as a younger person, how did this all happen? Hopefully kind of explain the why behind where we are today. I think sometimes we just assume, well, here we are, it's always been this way. It's always been this easy or this good or this big. No, and I think we have to understand that. And of course, many of us as young people dreaded history classes, but I think having lived it now, it becomes more interesting to be able to pass that along. And one of the things I really enjoyed seeing is the intergenerational discussions where, you know, grandparents will bring someone through the museum display and I'll listen across the room and hear them tell their own story, because certainly the story we've told through our exhibit is simply what we could best assemble with information we could find. But there are lots of stories that have yet to be told publicly that within families need to be shared.
That's Don Meyer, a staple in McLean County Agriculture, former extension director, now teaching at Illinois State University. We'll talk about the history of farming in the Great Corn Belt during a bicentennial speaker series talk Sunday, August 19th, at the Illinois State Museum in Springfield. It's also the last day for the Illinois State Fair. I'm Ryan Denham.
And this is Sound Ideas on 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.